Hello and welcome back to yet another episode of the VCpreneur podcast, a podcast that provides a unique perspective of the startup world through the lens of venture capitalists and entrepreneurs. I'm your host Digjay, and today I have with me Priya Mohan, who is currently a VC with Venture Highway, an early stage VC fund that collaborates with budding entrepreneurs to offer capital and mentorship. Before joining Venture Highway, Priya co-founded Vidyartha, a K-12 edtech startup, which she exited successfully to Byju's, which is now an edtech decacon. In this episode, Priya talks about her learnings as an entrepreneur and a VC, key considerations when evaluating an exit opportunity, choosing the right VCs to pitch to, embracing vulnerability, and the importance of mental well-being for VCs and founders. I had a great time having this candid conversation with Priya, who helps us unpack both the founder as well as VC perspectives on building startups, fundraising, and exits. So without much ado, let's jump into the episode and listen to what Priya has to share. Welcome, Priya. Welcome to the VCpreneur podcast. Glad to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here.
Okay. So for those who don't know you, could we start off with a brief background about yourself before we jump into the questions?
Sure. I think the biggest highlight would be my founder experience, not because of its outcome, but more like I would say it was 5.5 years of curated mistakes is what I would say jokingly to many people. I co-founded an edtech startup with my co-founder called Naveen. I ran it for about 5 years. It was in the K-12 space, and we sold to Byju's back in 2017, one of their first acquisitions. Prior to that, dabbled in investment banking, corporate finance, as would any person trying to find a path do. And I would say those were years of meandering. Biggest lessons, personality altering things happened when I was a founder. Post Vidyartha, I'm a newly minted VC. It's been 2 years. It started off as an experiment. I didn't think I'll last 2 years, possibly because I'm yet to get the idea for my next stint, or possibly because the fact that I love it and the experience of working with many, many young founders is unbelievably enriching. I work with a firm called Venture Highway. I lead Bangalore for them. Professionally, I'm a chartered accountant, but I call myself shattered than chartered most. And I went to ISB. I passed out in 2007.
Definitely a fascinating and interesting journey so far. I want to kick things off, by talking about your entrepreneurial experience. Walk us through the genesis of that edtech startup, Vidyartha, and tell us what was it that you were trying to solve for at the time?
Vidyartha was pretty much a replica of the story of my life, right? So there were two reasons that, I wanted to co-found something. And first level is I have to tell you why I wanted to become a founder. Yeah. And the second part, I'll tell you why we zeroed in on this concept. The first part as a founder was I've been stuck in Chennai and Madras for a very long time. And this was because of personal reasons. I tried to break away from the shackles and travel, but then I had to come back here because of personal reasons. My dad was unwell and some family responsibilities. And then post which, I got married to another first-time founder who has a manufacturing outlet in Chennai. So Chennai didn't seem to be leaving me. And honestly, at that point of time, save the beach, there was not much of a startup or not much of, financial services that was happening here. So when one looked at Facebook and Instagram, no Instagram then, but Facebook, it was extremely, I was getting super jealous of my batchmates who were flying high and getting into the pinnacles of these corporate world and some of them starting up. And I said, hey, listen, I need to do something for myself. And that's when I realized the only way I do it when there is nothing exciting available is to start something of your own, right? So that was part one. Part two as to why Vidyartha was the story of my life, right? Like I said, I keep using the word meandering because, I was always a jack of all trades, master of none. I love to do multiple things. I wanted to be a professional dancer, but then decided not to do that. I was a trained Bharatanatyam dancer, decided not to do that because A, I was not the best, and B, it never made money. It would never make money. And in the journey, I always wish that I had certain guidance, besides coming from a very traditional Tambram family where, most of them are high achievers. This academic orientation was mostly what drove me, right? But not really what was I interested in? What were my aptitudes? And that was the genesis of Vidyartha. I'm not going to get into the pivots and everything. At the end of it, what we did was we built proprietary diagnostics tool, which we implemented in schools, where our goal was to understand the learning path and the learning data of each student. And this was captured in multiple ways so that not just one data point over-indexed. For example, in India, we over-index only on the academic marks. But you'd be surprised that many of the kids who got only 70 and 80 actually are the ones who are cracking their engineering entrance exam. Why? Right? And many of the kids who got 95 and 98 in school could not crack the engineering entrance exams, all things being equal. What is the gap? So we built up proprietary tools for interest, personality, aptitude, academic marks, married everything, included in our rule engines and our algorithm, which later had the ML layer as well, rubrics of the boards, right? CBSE, ICSE, IGCSE. And what we built was a comprehensive learning plan for each student starting from grade 6. And that in substance was what we did for Vidyartha.
Right. And through this entrepreneurial journey, you know, what were the mistakes that you made early on that, you know, helped you grow as a founder in the later stages?
I told you that, you know, my description as a founder is a curated set of mistakes, you know, the 5 years of curated mistakes. And if I were to keep a diary of it, it would just, I think it would need a couple. But to highlight broadly the large things, right, there is a huge difference between persistence and perseverance towards an idea. And obsession and obstinacy as well, to some extent. What happens with first-time founders who are deeply passionate and married to an idea, and this happened to me the first 1.5 years, is that there's a lot of confirmation bias. You seek out data only to tell you that your idea is the best in the world, your business model is going to be out of the world. What then happens is you're not thinking in multi-dimensions. At that point of time, I was completely thinking from my heart, and not adding the brain part of it to say, how will I eventually make money? What is the ultimate business model? Did less on modeling that out and over-dialed on the consumer, over-dialed on just the idea. We did get a lot of feedback. But then, you know, what then happened was, no, they don't understand what we are trying to do. And we are building something here, which we are passionate about. I think the first thing is to separate feedback from people and to separate the feedback from the adjectives being used. You know, the biggest thing as a founder is you're seeking validation, right? And most of your 90% of your feedback is going to hit at that. The biggest lesson I learned is to separate the feedback from all of that noise and actually really look at the feedback hard and see if you can incorporate some of it. That's lesson one. The lesson two is lessons on building a great team. What really incentivizes people? The biggest thing is, as a founder, the kind of perfection that you look for, the kind of passion that you have towards your idea, it's very hard to find everybody in your team doing so. You need to build that. You can't expect it from day one. And the only way for you to build that is absolute transparency, handholding, and the ability to build businesses around people. Again, there are many schools of thought here. One of my biggest lessons today is you build businesses around people. You don't build people around businesses. This also changes the way when you look out for the right kind of people you hire, how do you nurture them? What level of patience or impatience you need to use, right? This is the second lesson, big lessons on how to build a team. And the third big lesson is there's a big difference between building 0 to 1 and building 1 to 10 and 10 to 100. And how do you start thinking ahead of the curve, right? So I think these are the, you know, I would say summary of 3 big lessons I've learned. And hopefully if I were ever to do another stint, I would be very careful on all these 3 points.
No, I think that's very well said. And there's a lot of nuance, you know, especially about the first point about feedback, because there's a thin line between having that self-belief and filtering out the right kind of feedback, but at the same time being, you know, practical about it and just taking it in from the right sources and, you know, feeding it back into your product. So, I mean, great points. And like you guessed it, you know, I was going to talk to you about the exit that came through. So, you know, walk us through that phase when MyJuice made that offer upfront. What were the key questions, considerations before you made the decision that, okay, you're ready to, you know, sell the company?
Back in 2015, 2016, the EdTech, the whole perception around EdTech is very different from what it is today. Today, EdTech is, oh my God, I mean, every founder, hot-blooded founder today is trying to do something in EdTech, which is great. I mean, it's so nice to see the ecosystem sort of transforming to where it is today. But back then, if you see, there were many companies which were struggling to monetize. You would hear of bridges of companies which were already being funded and companies who had just, you know, close to closing shop. Here we are, a very small bunch, very under the radar, did nothing on PR. right? And a B2B, we did a good job of B2B. And generally, you know the perception of B2B versus B2C. And this is after the EduComp and the other fiascos and trying to raise money. And like I said, these were one of my personality altering things, because every day you come back and you say, hey, I'm a reasonably smart person, right? I might not be, you know, Einstein, but I'm a reasonably smart person. Why is this happening to me? And, you know, that's where I want to bring a point. Having a co-founder sometimes really, really helps, because, you know, there's a kind of emotional balance. And that's where, you know, if you're able to balance out and support. So in this background, we still managed to raise money from very, very good angels and incubators. And we had about $1 million+ as our pre-series A. And understand, we had built a network of 3,500 plus schools. We had monetization. We had 60, 70 paying schools. We started experimenting on the commerce layer. All this with absolutely bootstrapped seed money, right? And still, it was not enough. And at that point of time, I would just wonder, look at how capital efficient we were. And, you know, today, sitting on the other side, I probably understand some of the concerns and questions VCs had. But in this background, we still had this angel check. And then, you know, we met Sequoia and they introduced us to Byju's. And I went to Leela, I still remember, in Chennai, and I met him. He sat across. And before I could, you know, introduce myself, here's a guy at 11:30 p.m. in the night, you know, bringing an energy like he's just ready to go and play, you know, bat for India, right? He started his vision on Byju's and told me the grandness of it. And I said, okay, now I understand why VCs want to back this dude, right? And then he said, what do you want to do? The way I positioned this is like, look, I'm going to talk to you about my product, but I'm going to, and it's almost, I assumed why these two would work together, right? And then, and I didn't consult my co-founder. This was my first meeting with him. And I didn't even tell Naveen anything. And I started positioning it as how both of us can bring down the world kind of a thing, right? And you know, here's a small person talking this to somebody who's raised multiple tens of millions of rounds and already on a trajectory. But the key considerations at that point of time, and I'm going to be very candid here, because it's important for people to share true stories, and I don't have any bravado, is yes, ideally, and my co-founder, especially more than I, would have loved if we had the opportunity to raise money and build this on our own, because genuinely we were on a path to building something. We had early metrics and we genuinely believed had we built that, we would have probably got better upside in terms of our next round and everything. But the reason we considered this very, very importantly is the situation then was very, very different. My concern was I did not want to take in this $1.5 million that people had committed. And if I was not able to raise money in the next 5-6 months and I didn't see the environment changing much, I wouldn't do good by my current stakeholders, because these were not VCs. These were big angels who were trusting our reputations to put it in the business. So I had that responsibility. And the other thing was, here is a company for the stage and time we were getting a great value, an opportunity to partner with probably something which can go big. And at that point of time, we didn't know that Byju is going to be like a, you know, Decacon, right? They were still young, but it was a belief in Byju as a founder. And I've, you know, at least partnering with somebody, right, would think. And the third thing was, you know, what, as a first time founder, at least for me, right, getting a reasonable outcome was better than, you know, not having clarity of thought. So I did not build this business to sell. But when I got this opportunity, these were the reasons that I picked to kind of take this call. If the situation was what it is today, the call could have been very different.
Absolutely. And the timing factor, like you said, you know, EdTech is at a very different state today compared to what it was back then. And, you know, Vidyartha was one of the first of the many acquisitions that Byju's has done thus far. So, you know, in hindsight, when you, you know, look back at the exit, what would you have done differently, you know, to have more leverage and to be better positioned, you know, for the exit opportunity that you got at that point?
I think one of the biggest things with founders is the belief that you have choices. It's very easy, theoretically, very easy to understand. But practically, when you're in a situation between just two choices that are in front of you, right? And, you know, you're obviously stressed with making payroll, you're stressed with multiple other things. Because today, as a VC, I just have stress. I don't have anxiety. Being a founder is always anxiety, right? So with multiple other things, it's very, very hard to take a conscious call on how do you expand choices? Is this the only two events that are possible, right? And I think at that point of time, I optimized for only the choices I had, which is either the Baiju sale or the 1.5 million. I was not able to think beyond what I could have possibly done. And today I can think of multiple other things. At that point of time, my mind was frozen. I think that's the biggest difference I would do as a second time founder is to understand you have choices because the way you negotiate, the way you evaluate every choice or every opportunity that is there for you significantly changes, right? When you say that, look, this is not the end of the road. This is not the only thing. Is there an opportunity to expand choices?
So if you had to advise founders, you know, how can they be better prepared to evaluate these exit options and create optionality for themselves and, you know, position themselves as an attractive target for a company? Of course, you don't start off by, you know, wanting to sell, but as the ecosystem evolves, it's good to have that optionality. And we'll obviously see more, you know, acquisition opportunities and exit opportunities for startups.
Got it. I think there are two parts to it, right? First step is for founders to be absolutely radically honest and transparent with themselves. And where they should come from is with no false bravado, right? Whether it is yourself, your team, your co-founder, what is it that you see yourself, your position? Have the ability to model it out. And the reason I'm saying this is optimism, and this is not mutually exclusive, right? As founders, we are born optimistic. I'm not saying don't be optimistic, but very often what happens is we all over-index on the fantastically successful stories, right? We look at the Zohos of the world. We look at the Freshdesk of the world. And of course, Baiju and, you know, all of these that, you know, there is so much internal pressure for us. And we are the harshest on ourselves that very often that we do not see certain facts which are staring at us, right? For example, what is your cash flow situation? What is your runway? Do you realistically see yourself raising money? If you're not able to raise money, why aren't you raising money? Is there something that you can tweak immediately? Do you have existing liabilities that you can afford to take care before you pivot or you take care of that? Are you having the necessary strength to power this through? If there is an option between raising money and selling, raising money, what does it land up or what does it give you? It has to give you 10x, 15x more outcome. Do you see a path for it? Do you know where to put that money? Do you have that capability? Answer or at least have a plan or at least have a modeling in your head. That's step one. So be radically honest. The second part is when you have an exit, I would say any information is better than no information. Always engage, right? You can always have the power of saying yes or no later, but engage, learn, listen more, understand where they are coming from, understand, you know, process it and see where you will fit, and then take a conscious call. Remember, you're going to be working with these people a long time, right? The team chemistry. And I'll tell you why M&As are happening. No matter how small or big founders are, there is a certain, I am very quirky. Founders are quirky and idiosyncratic in their own way. I'm not saying all of them, but at least I can speak with my own experience. It's very important to think about your ability to work together in a seamless way, or at least understanding, are you able to give each other enough space so that you can achieve the best? That is why if you see historically, the reasons many M&A, post-M&A fail is because of the whole thought would be pre-M&A, right? Like the whole deal and the construct. But there's no very little thought about modeling it out post-M&A. Where will you, simple things, where will you sit? Will you sit in your office, my office? Will I have time to have my own office and then move to your office? Is there a cultural difference? How are you going to manage that? A lot of that in that excitement to think about the M&A, we fail. So if you have the luxury of time, if you have the luxury of a large runway and you are able to create multiple options, take your time, think everything through before you make a call. One more point on that topic. Today is very different from 2012, 2013. The ecosystem is quite large. The other advice I would say is please pick up the phone, speak to people, reach out to people. You'd be surprised the number of people who are willing to give back and answer your questions.
Absolutely with you on that. You know, Priya, with this, I want to switch gears and talk more about Venture Highway and your VC journey. So tell us about, you know, thesis, fund size, and the vision of the fund. And, you know, what do you think is unique about Venture Highway compared to, you know, other funds of similar size today?
For me, Venture Highway, the reason I joined Venture Highway was because Venture Highway, the founder, started it as a passion. It was not a very traditional bunch of fund managers with, you know, a clear goal of starting a fund. Sameer and Neeraj were the founders, ex-Googlers, they worked together, and Neeraj is iconic, as you know, he was the CBO at WhatsApp, and, you know, they essentially wanted to pool in their money and give back to the ecosystem, and that was the genesis of Venture Highway, and then it went on to Fund 2. For me, that story was fascinating when I joined them, because like I said in the earlier point, for me, as my second stint, and if I were to give a reasonable number of years in this, the kind of people I was working with was very, very important. And the biggest worry personally for me was like, hey, 7 years I've been my own boss. Will I be able to adjust in a little more structured? You know, it's a very, very different ballgame, right? So that, I mean, it's just the people that attracted me to Venture Highway. Venture Highway is basically, we're a seed fund, focus on early stage. We do only tech, but when we do tech, we're very horizontal. We don't have any kind of sectoral focus. We come in as the first institutional check. I think one of the important things about Venture Highway is the kind of connects that we have back to the Silicon Valley, right? Probably the strongest connect to the Silicon Valley, given that we all come from an operating background, specifically if you look at Neeraj and Sumir's background, with their having operated in, you know, places like WhatsApp, Google, Microsoft, and Cisco, a network that they have across these companies and more at different functions is extremely useful for startups. And there are two reasons why a very strong Silicon Valley connect is extremely important. One is, as you know, the engineering, the building to scale, the UI, UX, the design aspect. I mean, definitely you have to accept that the quality there and the amount of resources available is very interesting, which, you know, Indian founders can take advantage of. And the second part is just for India, US outbound companies. These networks prove immensely useful in opening doors for first meetings, right? So I think that way, Venture Highway has a very, 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 very strong Silicon Valley connect. And our advisors, almost all of them are from Silicon Valley. And our founders have, you know, kind of almost exclusive access to them. And the other thing I like about Venture Highway is the fact that we're a dedicated seed fund. We're very focused. We like 0 to 1. We all understand 0 to 1 very well. And, you know, the journey with a founder is very different. And almost all good funds, you know, focus on the founding team in early stages. And so do we, but we really over-index on the founders. I mean, when we say we over-index on founders, our style of functioning with founders is nudge them along. We are non-intrusive. And, you know, most of our founders will speak to this. We're almost like a family, right? Because when you invest in an idea, and as I have gone through, there's a possibility of a pivot. You know, there's a possibility of many things changing when you invest as early as we do, right? So we believe that the founders are the best guys to meander through this, and we just have to partner with the right guys. And we're also particular about the software aspects of it. So that's Venture Highway, and you know our star portfolio. So, you know, we've written First Checks and Meesho, Moglix, the likes, and very excited. Like I said, the Venture Highway founders family is very close. And personally for me, it's a learning journey. I'm just 2 years and venture is a long game.
Absolutely.
And the biggest lesson I learned is how to believe that you're adding value being passive, because the first 6 months of meeting founders, I used to like get so engrossed in business models. I used to imagine operations, right? I think that's the biggest thing. And my favorite line here from a founder to a VC is, just because you think you're a good jockey does not mean you'll be a good horse picker, right? And venture is all about picking the right horse, right?
Some very interesting points, you know, especially with having VCs that have operator experience. Tell me, you know, how does being an ex-founder and, you know, being in the trenches before help you in your current role as a VC?
It has its advantages and disadvantages, like I said. So I think it's wrong to assume, I can speak for it personally. It's wrong to assume that, you know, you make a natural transition or that you have any specific advantage. I learn a lot from my fellow board members who are VCs with perhaps no operating experience, because they look at businesses from a very different light from the way I do. So I want to start with that. I think the first thing I learned, which I told you, is about ability to dispassionately look at the business model and the business rather than being immersed in it, which is a very natural tendency of having been a founder, right? So when somebody comes and pitches you, the first thing my mind would race is what are the different possibilities, and regress to your own experience on many things. I think that was a very hard trait to lose for me, and it took a while. Okay. And the second thing is the optimism, right? You're so optimistic as a founder, that kind of optimism also, you know, kind of carries on. But let me tell you the advantages. I think being a founder, you bring a certain energy to the table. And I realize with talking to my fellow founders, whether especially now when you're doing these Zoom calls, right? It's very important to work extra hard to make a conversation amazing for both sides. And if we can do a little bit, and forget about whether we're going to invest, not invest. I genuinely believe that each conversation, when the founder goes back, he should feel great about it. And he should feel that he's taken away something and he had a good conversation. We're all adults and we realize that we have our business models and, you know, some investments work out, some don't. But I think that's a fundamental thing that I'm very, very personally committed to make every conversation meaningful for a founder. At least I try, sometimes I fail at it, but bring the same amount of energy to every conversation. The second thing is, I think empathy, if I might say so myself, because, you know, I can totally feel, especially with my portfolio companies, what they go through. It's very easy for us to throw 500 different ideas. For us, at the end of the day, it's one of the many. But when this is your entire life and you're battling between managing people, hiring, growth, board members, putting together those Excel sheets to show your metrics, raising your next fund, and suddenly reading an announcement that your competition has raised 5 million more, I can only imagine what your mind will be going through. So I think empathy is a second thing. And I think the third thing is, and here I'm just switching to my gender, women bring a slightly different perspective to things, right? I would say, I don't know if it's an advantage or disadvantage. I would just leave it at the fact that there is a slightly different perspective.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And, you know, hopefully we are seeing some progress on that front. Still a long way to go when it comes to, you know, having more women founders as well as VCs.
Yeah.
But definitely a very good point. And, you know, some of the points that you mentioned, VCs also have their own biases with their backgrounds. So an interesting thing for founders to note that, you know, while operator background is definitely, you know, helpful, some VCs that do not have a founder mindset can bring that different perspective and different questions to the table, some challenging questions that an operator VC probably wouldn't. So keeping those things in mind is very important when you, you know, pick your VCs, and having a good mix adds more value.
Absolutely. And so it's a very interesting point you bring out, that is picking your VCs. I think this goes back to two points I made earlier, that we have a choice. And secondly, separate the feedback from the person, right? So you're dispassionately wanting to improve and iterate on yourself and your business. It shouldn't matter where it came from. As long as it's a valid point, I think we should act on it. The second one, I think founders should also realize that it's not like VCs only pick the founders. Founders also pick VCs, right? So make sure that there's a connect. Make sure, I mean, of course, you know, the brand and the name is important, but do your diligence. Make sure that you align with people you relate to. Ultimately, you're going to be working with humans, right? So I think that's another important point.
Absolutely. So, you know, you mentioned that, you know, we're working through Zoom calls now, and it's difficult to make that connect that you would, you know, probably be able to in in-person meetings. You know, what are some essential skill sets that VCs as well as founders need to develop today to build that relationship that you're talking about and be more engaged?
I would actually like to take a step back and say that in-person meetings is just one component of the whole thing, right? There's a larger thing that the world has changed and it's affecting us in multiple ways. And, you know, I wrote this blog post on LinkedIn called The Importance of Emotional Vocabulary. I think, firstly, because we are running at still 100 miles an hour, very often, very few of us have the ability to pause. Are we okay? What are we going through? And I think there's an economic benefit to it, right? And the economic benefit is to actually accept and understand what are you going through. And the times are very different now. So it's very important to take a step back and preserve yourself. Because it's like in the flight, they tell you, right, wear your own seatbelts before you help your kids. Because unless you're better, you're not going to be able to help anybody else. I think that's the first thing that I have realized. Without this kind of, you know, razor-focused self-preservation and understanding, is going to be very difficult to power through and be productive. I think that's the first point. It's very important. Founders, VC, anybody, right? The second thing is, I think there is in this situation, you know, I see companies with tailwinds. I see companies with headwinds. Both. But whatever happens, it's amplified because you don't have the touch and feel of human interface. And there is general uncertainty towards so many things. And if you feel there's a negative amplification, please reach. It's very important to reach out for help. For me, I cling on to family so importantly. For me, that's my source of strength, my child and my husband and, you know, the little family that we have. And I think it's very, very important to cling on to family. The third thing, and I'm going to write something about it, is to understand that you're not alone in being vulnerable. It's okay. And I would urge VCs, founders, the big guys, small guys, to actually be open about vulnerability. I think it's important to celebrate that vulnerability, right? Because otherwise, you know, what happens is you see the bigness and the largeness of certain people. Actually, for people who need help, it just makes them feel even more smaller. It's nice to know that everybody is vulnerable and they're working through that. So I wanted to make these larger points, but coming to the Zoom point, like I said, I have certain pointers that I have for myself. I always keep my video on. And there is a, you know, debate whether it is productive, not productive. I mean, I'm talking for personal reasons. I just like to see people, look into their eyes and talk. It just helps build a better rapport. It just makes the conversation far more warmer. Like I said, every conversation need not have a eventual commercial, you know, outcome, which may be necessarily good for both of us. But at least let's make the conversation interesting. And second thing is the energy. Try and bring a little bit of energy into the conversation. The third thing is I do a little more number of meetings with founders than I would do with face-to-face. So, and I also try and explain that to them, right? So which means one meeting, two meeting, three meetings with founders rather than just a couple of meetings face-to-face, right? And it's okay. And founders understand that because sometimes to take a call, you need those conversations. I think largely these are my toolkits.
No, very helpful. And, you know, especially the point on vulnerability, you know, that's something which is not spoken much about. And, you know, we need more founders and VCs like you to come up and say that it's pretty normal. You know, even if you look at the good news that the media covers, there is a lot of vulnerability that goes on behind these founders and a lot of hard work and pain that they go through. And it's okay to be in that position and reach out for help. So yeah, I would have loved to, you know, touch on more questions and keep going on. But in the interest of time, let's switch to our final segment, which is the rapid fire round. I'll ask you a few questions and, you know, hope to get your honest opinions on the same. First question. One thing you'd like to change or improve about the startup ecosystem in India?
The point I made before, I wish more people were more open to being most authentic and, you know, come out with what they went through, right? Because we fear judgment the most. I think if we can keep that away and have an honest exchange, especially if it comes from influencers, I think that'd be amazing. And VCs as well, I think.
Walk us through the most unusual or memorable pitch meeting that you had with a founder.
I think I've had many, many memorable meetings with founders, but I think there was this incident that really struck out in my head where, you know, I was waiting for this founder in a coffee shop and, you know, I had just finished another meeting. The founder comes and I smiled and he said, "Hey, listen, I want to do this differently. I think it's very important. You pitch to me first and tell me a little bit about Venture Highway and yourself. And, you know, it's very important for me to know that." I was taken aback, but I said, I loved it. I mean, it's just the confidence. And I think it's a very interesting way that founders today are actually, like I said, there needs to be an equal amount of diligence on both sides. Regardless, you know, our style at Venture Highway is we always do a 5-minute introductory pitch before we kind of ask the founder about themselves. But this really made me smile thinking of myself as a founder because I always had this attitude that everybody is doing me a favor by meeting me. So I used to be this over, you know, eager to please kind of a person. But that kind of taught me that it's okay to just ask these questions, right? That was an interesting moment for me that registered.
A common myth about venture capital.
That it's a very easy job, right? And I'm saying this is very easy compared to being a founder. Of course, I was guilty of it as well, right? Because when you go to 5 pitches just to hear no, you come back and say, oh, these guys sitting in their fancy offices, making their fancy salaries. What I would say is, like I said, the founder's job is the hardest, but a VC's job is not easy either. And the reason is it has its own amount of stress. And it's very interesting because you will be doing 200 different things. And your ability to structure, add value in each, manage in a same day, like I'll be doing a podcast, then there are 2 board calls, then I'll be doing an interview, then I'll have 3 founder pitches. It's a very, very different kind of a ball game. Second biggest myth, nobody has an intent to do a personal rejection. I think that's a very important takeaway for founders. People reject a business or a business model. And that rejection does not necessarily mean they don't believe in you or the business model. It could also mean that they don't know enough, hence they don't have a conviction. So it's very important to not take that personally as well.
People from the startup ecosystem that you look up to and that inspire you.
So many people, right? Girish of Freshdesk is hugely inspirational for me, right? Again, very easy, very down to earth. A guy who wears his authenticity on his shoulders. A very dear friend of mine, Vinod, who's a SaaS founder again, who sold his company to Cisco. Very inspirational. My portfolio companies, right? So many founders who've been able to navigate through this COVID times. And actually, I'm very jealous. I'll tell you why. These guys are almost 5-6 years, sometimes a decade younger. The kind of clarity of thought they bring to the table and the way they navigate situations is just amazing. So very, my entire portfolio companies, I mean, the founders, I learned so much from them.
Great. Priya, this has been one amazing candid conversation. You know, like I'm sure there are a lot of takeaways both for VCs and founders. I'm glad we could do this. As a final note, any thoughts for both current and aspiring founders who are listening to this podcast?
Like I said, accepting that we are fallible, our vulnerability is not mutually exclusive with optimism and ambition. These are two separate things. It's important to power through, but at every point of time, take a step back and do an honest introspection. Mental well-being is very, very important. That's my final thought.
Awesome. And that's something which we need to amplify more in the ecosystem, especially as we see more founders, you know, coming up and starting companies. Priya, thanks again for your time. It was amazing to have you on the show. And hopefully we'll have you back on the show soon again.
Thank you so much. And I look forward to it.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the VC Bruno podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please let our guests know about it. Share your thoughts on social media and let them know what were your key takeaways. We would truly appreciate if you could subscribe to our podcast on the podcast platform of your choice and leave us a review on Apple iTunes. This will help others discover the podcast. To get insights and to learn more about startups and venture capital, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We will love to hear from you there. You can find all episodes together on our website, thevcpreneur.com. We will be back again next week with another VCpreneur that is making a dent in the venture universe. Until then, take care and keep shining.